This is the Rental Income Podcast, where we talk to owners of rental properties and give you actionable tips and advice that will help you make more money while dealing with less hassle. And now your host, Dan Lane.
I put together a list of 7 things I wish I knew earlier about renting properties, and you can download your free copy. Just go to my website, freelandlordgift.com. On the show today, we have Luke Cohn, and Luke has a really inspiring story. He started buying trailers in a trailer park when he was 25. By the time he was 30, he had enough trailers and he had enough rental income that he was able to retire from his job and focus full time on managing his portfolio. I think this is a really crazy story, so let's find out how he did it. Luke, welcome to the show. Why don't you start with just telling us a little bit about yourself and how you first got started in real estate?
Okay, not a problem, Dan. Thanks for having me on the show.
Sure.
I just turned 30. I've always grew up in the mechanical business as far as work. Prior Army, spent 6 years National Guard and sometime active deployed, 1 tour in Iraq. But I always had an itch even just getting out of school. And going through tech school and everything else, that's kind of where my itch started. And I called my dad and was, instead of renting when I'm moving all across the country with school and the Army and everything else, how about, we buy some places, I fix them up, and when I move, we'll just rent them out and start building a nationwide rental portfolio. And I got the, oh, that's a terrible idea, we're not doing that, just rent, go to school, don't worry about it. So I kind of put it aside for a couple of years. I got deployed for 2 years. And then I finally, when I came back, I moved to Virginia Beach where I live now. And I was only here about a year before I kind of got the itch again. And it was the classic, just reading books. And I just heard a seminar that was in town, one of the big seminars coming in. And I went to that and I just hit the ground running with that, taking classes and seminars and, paying to learn my own way. And that was back when, like I said, 5 years ago. So I started doing it part-time as I was working full-time with Mercedes-Benz. So a lot of lunch times, late nights, evenings and weekends, running my business that way, trying to learn as I go. So I started off with a couple rental properties and decided my niche as far as getting into the business was going to be mobile homes. So had some single family rent, some big single family rentals that we just kind of lucked into, but really concentrating on mobile homes first was my goals.
So why don't you take me back to your very first deal? How did you find that first property?
That was a mobile home deal, actually. And what was really exciting about that is it was while I was taking an online class. I started off my classes with wholesale, lease option, and then mobile homes. And the nice thing about the mobile home was it was actually an online class over a period of, I think it was 6 weeks. So each week you would do your online class and you'd have homework and, go out, do some driving around, make offers, stuff like that. So by week 2 or 3, we had found a deal and we had went in, it's a mobile home. And we had went in, it was a small deal, roughly, less than $4,000. So we did a contract with the gentleman. Gave ourselves 2 weeks. We put down, I had a partner at the time. We each put down $200 is all we came out of pocket. So we locked up the deal for about $400. And then we were just running around like crazy. We didn't know what to do. Should we rent this place out? It would have some good cash flow. Should we fix it up and sell it? We're trying to get bids from all kinds of different painters and contractors that, as we're trying to build our list of our power team, we had no contacts at the time. We're just running around like crazy. And we told our instructor on the class, like, hey, we found this deal. What should we do? We have no idea what to do with it. And by the time we get to our next class, our instructor asks us, well, what do you think you're going to do with that mobile home? And we said, too late. It's already sold. Somebody came up and offered us $7,500 cash or something.
So, we had. So you had flipped it before you even owned it.
Yeah, we had a contract on it for 2 weeks because one nice thing. I mean, it's like any other. You could, wholesale out a contract or assign a contract on a house. Same thing with a mobile home. And it's real easy to get them to accept a contract with a couple days in it because you can't purchase that home if you're not approved by the park. So it always gives you some leeway, like, hey, yes, let's agree to this sale, but you know that I have to be approved by the park. We're going to need a few days to take that happen. So we had somebody come up and make us an offer, a cash offer. So the whole deal, all said and done, you know, the sellers paid us first, and then we went and, or the buyers paid us first, and then we went and paid our seller, and in less than 6 days, we had found the deal, sold the deal, closed the deal on both ends, and put like $3,300 in our pocket. And that's what started off our business. Then we opened accounts, got our LLC, did business cards, all that type of stuff. And like I said, by the next week, our instructor was going to ask us, you know, well, what do you want to do with that thing? And we're like, it's already sold.
That's great. So then how did you start holding on to them? Like, was that your second deal?
Yeah, well, between probably the second and third, we would hold. The goal was to hold about 50% rentals and 50%. I also do a lot of owner financing on them. Mm-hmm. So from my standpoint, especially when you talk landlording and the different headaches that can be involved with it, I do a lot of 3 to 5 year owner financing where my payments are exactly the same. But since they're planning on purchasing it in the long run, I don't have any of the maintenance headaches. So when you start talking about tenants calling you and stuff like that, and
you don't have any of that.
Correct. So it eliminates a lot of that. And then I, like I said, I try to keep a 50-50 split because the great thing about rental incomes is rental income lasts forever. The problem with the owner financed is it drops off. So do you want the long-term cash flow or do you want the cash flow with no headaches? And I decided I want to create a mix of them. So our first big rental was a fairly large house. We happened to know the property manager that was managing it at the time, and the owner had came across that he wanted to sell. So we walked into a pretty good deal on that, bought a place with about $100,000 in equity in it, and it was already long-term tenant, it was like $2,700 a month or something. It was pretty ridiculous. So we walked right into that, you know, easy $1,000 plus cash flow right off the bat. It was probably, it was definitely within my first year. It was when I got this one that was a good rental. It was a 3-bedroom, 2-bath, and I was all into this thing for less than $6,000, including purchase, repairs, everything. And it rented out for $850 a month, which gave me over $500 a month cash flow.
Wow.
off a $6,000 investment. So
that's incredible. Wow.
And I've had that rented out ever since. And ever since day one, it's made, you know, more than $500 a month cash flow.
That is really awesome. All right. So take me back. Like, tell me what I could do to duplicate what you've done. So you're 25, you're a mechanic, you don't know much about real estate, you know, just your little bit of training that you've had. Mm-hmm. How did you get to the point where you're starting to get a substantial side income going on?
Yeah. That was always great. And I think, you know, a lot of people, I looked at the mobile homes because it was a small capital investment to get in with a lot of times greater returns when you look at percentages. Mm-hmm. In the rental business, it can be just the same or, as you can see, even better. You know, in the rehab business, people look at big chunks. You know, I look at percentages. You know, my return on investment is always in percentages. So when deals like that where I only have $6,000 into a deal and I'm making $500 a month, that's a pretty good return.
Right.
So I look at those smaller ones. I bought everything. I mean, we got trailers from free to, you know, I think that $5,000 or $6,000 mark for the longest time is the most. To this day, I don't think I've ever spent more than about $8,000 on a trailer. And, you know, and that.
Now, can you get financing on a trailer or do you have?
You can't.
Okay. So,
no, I mean, let me take that back. You could, but it's next to impossible. The rates are ridiculous, and they're only going to finance a small portion of it. On top of that, they look at it like a motor vehicle, that it's a depreciating asset. So okay. I deal a lot. I don't deal in a lot of newer homes because you're spending $50,000, $60,000, $80,000 on them. where I can buy an older three bedroom for $5,000. And when I'm done fixing it, it's going to be just as nice or nicer.
Okay.
So yeah, there's not, and that's where I can build a good rental market with it, but that's also where I build a good owner finance market, because there is very little financing available for people that do want to buy it. So I sell a lot of stuff on payments at the same time as do rentals.
So how are you finding tenants or, I guess, potential owners?
I've always, between just advertising at the property and Craigslist, that's all I've had to ever do for marketing on both sides. I did a lot of driving around and calling and looking at ads and stuff my first year, but I just built my business in a manner and dealt with people in a manner that after year one, I mean, between years two and four or years two and five, I almost never looked for a deal. It's all word of mouth and, my sellers calling their friends or my buyers calling their friends or park managers that want to deal with me. And then once I get the property up, I do have a lot of friends that want to rent or buy from me. And then also a sign in the window and Craigslist, as far as my market area, they're both just, I get about 50% response from both of them. Wow. And in my area, you know, I can rent a three bedroom. I rent my two bedrooms for around $750 and my three bedrooms around $850. And in the Virginia Beach area, you know, three bedrooms will still go for $1,000, $1,200, $1,300. So a three bedroom, which, you know, most of my trailer sizes are about 1,000 square feet, three bedrooms for $850 a month, it gets a pretty good demand.
Right. And so you said you've got some single families and some duplexes too?
Yes.
Okay. Yep. So how did you kind of diversify into that?
That was more just some, like I said, some good deals that I stumbled across through the network of people I know. The one was from a property manager who she was managing it, but even when she wanted to sell it to us, she's like, "This thing is so easy. You know, you don't need to pay me to manage it. It manages itself." They're long-term tenants. They take good care of it. So we held that one for a long time. And then another one is a deal that I got through my local real estate group. So that's Tidewater Real Estate Investors Group, which I'm actually now the vice president of. But the president at the time had a good deal come across, and that's how I ended up buying a duplex off of them. So if you're looking for good deals, a lot of times that's a good place to find them too. People within a REIA group selling properties back and forth or wholesaling properties to each other. Right. So I picked up a killer deal on that duplex.
When you first started, did you have a plan that within 5 years you wanted to be able to quit your job, or did it just kind of happen?
No, that's kind of how it evolved. As I was looking over, you know, and kind of set my goals, and I'm actually at a stone wall right now because I've always been very goal orientated. And going back even to high school, by the time I was, by the time I was 11 or 12, I knew I was going to be in the Army. But by the time I was 15, 16, I knew I was going to go into mechanical and I was going to get into Mercedes-Benz. I was completely signed up and had all my paperwork done and ready to go for the Army by the time I was 16.
Wow.
I signed 3 days after I was 17. I knew I was going to go to tech school, get a 4.0, get into Mercedes, work at a dealership. So I did everything right on schedule or right in my goal lines. So when I started my business, I was looking and just trying to be realistic and how long it would take me to build a cash flow that would, kind of match what I was making with my full-time job. So the goal is always to be able to walk away and not take a hit.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of ways you can do that. You know, you can increase your income, you can reduce your expenses, reduce your debt, however you want to do that. But then the aspect of having more time, being a full-time mechanic really did not comply well with trying to do part-time real estate investment, because it's not like I had an office job where I was on a computer or a phone or could take phone calls, or, if I had to leave or take an odd lunch, I was a very set schedule and I had to be at my shop. So that was tough, and I decided that in about 5 years should be enough time for me to build up the business I wanted to at the current rate that I was going, also to learn whatever else I wanted to learn in that time, to build up the cash flow. And I figured after about a 5-year run of it, if I didn't have a good handle on it and couldn't run it more efficiently, then it was probably a sign that I was either doing something wrong or should pick something else. So
right.
I just happened to be 25 at the time. So I said 5 years, and, you know, on my 30th birthday seems like a good goal. You know, it was just a good timeline. So when it came around, I was getting really close to it, and I was 100% set on it. And then you start second guessing yourself. You start looking at financials and deals coming and going, or some deals going south, or, you know, in today's world too, if you don't have a W-2 income, getting any financing is near impossible.
Right.
You know, insurance, all these things you have to consider when you're looking at going self-employed. But I decided that I needed to just stick to it. You know, I'm always one that I set my goals. I tell people my goals. And that's one way how I keep accountability, is I just tell everybody what I'm going to do. And then when it gets there, it's like, well, now I have to do it.
Right.
I told everybody I was going to do it. I can't.
Right. You can't back down now. Right.
I can't back out now. So, and in the back of my head, that's part of it too. It's like, I told all my friends, all my family, everybody that this is what I'm going to do. And in 5 years, I'm going to do it full time and quit my job and all that. So nothing's ever perfect, but sometimes you just got to go ahead and jump and try it. So that's where I'm at this year.
Is there any advice that you would give to someone who wants to do what you've done?
I mean, one hard lesson and setback throughout is always the partner thing. You know, that's partnering with anybody, but partnering with a friend, you know, that's how I started, and it got bad. You know, that's one life lesson that every business person will tell you, is that you're going to have a partner problem. And the best thing I would say is, don't try to run your business by yourself. You know, have plenty of people and professionals to help you, but be in control of your business by yourself. Either be the only person in charge, or the next best scenario is always to have an odd number. You know, if you have 3 people as part of the company, you guys can always outvote each other. Then you can always make a decision. You know, me and my partner, we knew each other so well, and we were so stubborn. You know, when we got in a headlock, it just neither of us gave. And, you know, we were both completely in control, equally in control. And it caused for a lot of headaches. So
you guys were buying houses together. And then at some point you split and went on your own. Okay.
Yeah, correct. Yeah, we didn't last but less than the first 2 years, year and a half. And we started running into problems, which, like I said, a lot of people will tell you that's not uncommon. So
yeah.
If you know about that ahead of time, I think it would save you a lot of headaches. One of the things we disagreed on, and one of my strategies was, because I had a full-time job, my goal with the business was to reinvest everything that I made, because I was trying to grow my business. I wasn't just trying to get a little extra cash on the side right then. So every dime that I put into the business, every dime that it made just stayed in the business. I didn't want to take any money out. I didn't want to spend any of the money. Et cetera. I wanted to actually grow the business and watch it grow fast. And my partner, you know, he just wanted money right now, you know, whatever we made, he wanted. And that's one thing that I don't think it would have grown as fast as it did, you know, for 5 years, you know, every dime that I made went back into it.
Right.
You know, cause I was making my own money and my regular job, and I used my money for my bills, and my business money was strictly my business money.
So today, as being full time, are you still able to put money back into the business?
Yeah, that's a balancing act that I'm trying to figure out this year now, because obviously I need some of it for living now.
Sure.
But one thing that I'm still in my first year, we're planning ahead. I did kind of just save up money and set aside money for living costs. So I'm really not at a point yet where I'm kind of dividing up how much I got to take out of the business or how much cash flow I need to use for my living expenses. So that's kind of where this year is at. I'm just kind of sitting on, you know, some money that I saved up to put aside for that. And after this year is over, towards the end of the year, I can kind of look back and see, okay, now that I was on my own, you know, what do I really need to set aside every much and plan on that, either get a, you know, the best way to look at it is, how many more rentals do I need to cover that? You know,
if I
need another $2,000 a month, don't plan on taking $2,000 a month out. Plan on how do you build it up $2,000 a month more.
Right.
So once again, the net numbers don't change.
How many hours a week do you think you're involved in your business? Is it a full-time job or is it not really?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I would say the nice thing is a lot of times it can be not really, you know, it's the nice thing, the biggest part about it now is having my own time. You know, if I needed to go do something today or go out of town or, you know, go hang out with friends, I could do that. You know, I took a month off this, I'm originally from Minnesota, so I took basically the entire month of July this summer and went home to see friends and family that I haven't been able to see, you know, so time like that. And then my week to week schedule, like any other business, when you can run all day and all night long, or you can have a day where nothing really acquires your attention. So I would say it averages out to just below a full-time schedule, but you got to mix in some nights and some weekends and stuff like that. And I can go 1 week where I'm busy 12 hours a day all week long. And then I can have another week where everything goes smooth and I only need to spend a couple hours a day, or, you know, 2 or 3 hours every other day.
How does it work when you're out of town? Do you have someone that's there to deal with an emergency that comes up, or?
Yeah. I have a couple people I can call on, you know, a couple of people through my business network, or people, I have some people that I joint venture on some deals. So if anything comes up with those, I have those people in my back pocket I can call. And then your biggest thing is keeping, you know, some contractors or handyman or something like that, because that's going to be your biggest thing. You know, most of your documents and money and stuff like that, you can handle over the phone or the internet. But if you need to get somebody to the property, you need to have somebody, you know, some boots on the ground, as they say, to go over there. So you definitely need to have that in place.
All right, Luke, it is time now to get into the lightning round. Now, I want to do a little bit of an experiment today. Normally, we ask 5 questions in 60 seconds, but today I want to try something new and drop the 60-second requirement just for today only to see how it goes. So we're going to ask 5 questions. It's going to be rapid fire. We're going to keep it moving quickly, but if you go over 60 seconds, the buzzer is not going to go off. So are you up for that?
I am.
All right, let's do it.
Now, the Rental Income Podcast Lightning Round. 5 rapid-fire questions and answers.
All right, the first question is, what's your favorite real estate book?
There's a lot of good ones, but I think the best one, real estate or money-minded, is Richest Man in Babylon by George S. Klassen.
Question number 2, the number one fear that I hear all the time from people on why they don't want to own a rental property is they don't want to get a call at 3 a.m. that a toilet's clogged. As a landlord, have you ever gotten this call?
I have gotten them multiple times. I've been woken up at midnight, 2, 3 in the morning, both by legitimate and non-legitimate claims.
Number 3, if you had a property sitting vacant for 6 months, you had a potential renter apply that had horrible credit and a spotty work history, would you take a chance on them and rent to them or let the property sit?
I have taken a chance on people before. It usually depends on the vibe I get from them and the story. It almost always comes back to bite you in the butt. So right now I'm actually sitting on one because I wouldn't take the people. So I've tried it and I've gotten bit.
Question number 4, if you had to give one piece of advice to a new landlord, what would it be?
Build your systems. Have your people in place. Like I said, if you need to step away, if you have another manager in place, if you have your contractors in place, build your business like you don't need to be in it.
Question number 5, would you rent a property to your best friend?
No, I wouldn't. I've considered it multiple times, and in the back of my head, I always get this little gut feeling that it's a bad idea. So go with your gut. If it doesn't feel like it's, if it feels like it's going to fall apart, don't do it.
All right, Luke, well, thank you so much for joining us on the show. I really appreciate it. If anyone is brand new to real estate investing and you want to get started buying rental properties, but you're not exactly sure where to start, I've got a brand new 3-part video training series that walks you through exactly how to start buying rental properties. If you want to take the class, again, it's totally free. Just go to rentalcourse.com and you can sign up right there. Thank you so much for listening. My name is Dan Lane, and this has been the Rental Income Podcast.